Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. We are also sponsored by NFL Shop Europe, and I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner from North America and from Sky Sports, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, it was another fantastic week because we had surprises. I don't know, it's just every week. I was writing this yesterday. The NFL now, if you come out of an NFL weekend and your notebook isn't packed with storylines, then you're not looking in the right place, because it seems like it happens every single week.
Yeah, you know, we could talk for hours. I mean, hours and hours about the action that every weekend. And you know, what you want drama, you want suspense, you want, you know, you want to laugh, you want to cry. It's all right there every NFL weekend.
Jeff, I just want to start, actually, if you can indulge me for a second. Somehow, some way, we ended up on my favorite subject on Sky Sports on Sunday night. We ended up talking about Colin Kaepernick. And so I actually was, well, I said he was a bad quarterback. I believed he was a bad quarterback. Sean and Dara felt that he was a good quarterback because he got a team to a Super Bowl. I argued that Rex Grossman got a team to a Super Bowl, and you know, just getting a team to a Super Bowl doesn't make you a good quarterback, and he's got worse since then. But one of the questions they asked me was, why don't you like Colin Kaepernick? And I just answered, because I've met him. And so people have...
That's an indictment right there, when that's all you have to say.
So people have asked me on Twitter. My Twitter blew up after that, and people asked me to elaborate. So rather than write it all down, I'm going to just give a couple of examples of when I've met and interacted with Colin Kaepernick. The first time was the summer of 2013, and I go to the 49ers to do interviews, and I spent 20 minutes with Patrick Willis, about 20 minutes with Navarro Bowman, and I think I've told this story to you before, Jeff. I had a 10-minute slot with Colin Kaepernick, and he spent 8 minutes stood in the doorway chatting to an old college buddy of his, and then walked in, sat down, looked at me, and went, "You've got 2 minutes." I was like, "But I haven't started my 10 minutes yet." He's like, "You've got 2 minutes." And didn't say another word until we started the interview, so that was really awkward. Around the London game, when they came over, he kind of acts like a spoilt baby. He wouldn't take off his headphones to go into a press conference. They weren't league-sponsored headphones. He was kind of acting like a little child, basically. And then he had no interest. I could tell when I spoke to him, he had no interest in sort of expanding the game. I don't, and some players don't, I get that. But he was very kind of standoffish. He didn't show up at the fan rally in Trafalgar Square. So in all the interactions I've had with him, that's why I have that feeling towards him. And Jeff, I ham it up a lot when we do our fan forums and our stage shows. But, you know, I've spoken to players around the league who know my feelings on Cap. And they tell me I'm not a million miles off. So that's just my opinion. And I'm just going to lay this last bit out there, that I've interviewed hundreds of NFL players, and, you know, I had 45 minutes with Ray Lewis. Joe Montana's shown me around his home and his swimming pool before we start the interview, which lasts half an hour in his home cinema. I mean, it's not like I haven't had experience of NFL players. And also, I want to just point out, it's nothing to do with what he's doing now. I think he's making a great stand and a great statement, and he's certainly put his money where his mouth is with that. But, you know, I'm not going to like every player that comes into the NFL. Most of them are probably not going to like me asking questions. He's just one of them.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting to hear, for me, to hear you talk that way about him, because that is the only guy, Neil. Now, I've heard you say, you know, some guys are tougher interviews or hard to get words out of, or, you know, but he might be the first guy I've ever heard you say that you genuinely don't care for. And yeah. You know, that surprised me, because I think, you know, I know you very, very well. We've been friends for years, and you try and see the good in everybody. And for, you know, for you to feel that strongly about a guy, that's a pretty good indicator to me that's not a guy I want to get to spend much time with.
All right. So let's, you've indulged me, Jeff. I appreciate it. One other thing on the Reynolds radar, and then we'll move on to the NFL. Big week, of course, London week, but Even bigger week in the Reynolds family, Jeff. It's George's first kitted practice on Thursday night. He's got his shoulder pads are arriving today. The helmet is being mailed out. He's got his first kitted practice Thursday night with the Kent Exiles. His mum's a nervous wreck.
You know what? I thought about that. I knew I saw you had tweeted that out, and I thought back. It really took me back to my seventh grade year, which is the first year that you could play tackle football in, you know, where I grew up. And I remember that very thing, you know, what it was school sponsored. So you got your equipment from the school. And I remember coming home that day and going into my mom and dad's bedroom. There was a mirror and, you know, like a makeup nightstand for my mom, and putting on my helmet and just looking at myself in the mirror with that helmet on. And what a great thrill that is for a kid, you know, when you get your equipment for the first time. And I thought about George, and I thought, wow, that's so cool. I hope you take plenty of pictures, and again, mom takes Quaaludes or whatever she needs to do to get through it.
Well, especially as
she'll be watching him play for the next, I don't know how many years, with her hands over her eyes going, oh, my boy.
Yeah, that's how my mom was when I was playing, for sure, bless her. One of the things that George did say was, you know, if the play's not there, because he plays quarterback, he said, if it's not there, I'll just tuck it and run, and I'll take on those defenders. And I was like, George, do you want to play quarterback, or do you go and play another position? Because listen to what Doug Peterson is telling Carson Wentz: get out of bounds or get down.
Slide, Georgie, slide.
Yeah. That was. What about that Eagles win then, Jeff, as we start to look back on week three? Because I was just going to say, I was going to ask you this, because I have to do the power rankings for NFL UK every Tuesday. And we're only 3 weeks in, and I've already had, in number one spot, I've had Seattle, I've had Pittsburgh. Seattle was a preseason one. Then I had Pittsburgh for 2 weeks. And this week I've gone with New England, because Pittsburgh got absolutely hammered in Philadelphia. So that's an example of the changing nature of the NFL. Just before I get to the Eagles, who would you have number one? I mean, this is tough. I mean, I've got New England now at number one, just because Belichick finds a way.
Yeah, you know what? You look at that football team, and you look at a number of football teams right now that you would think, like, I look at the Cardinals and say, where are they? I mean, this is a crazy, crazy start to this season. And, you know, the Eagles come out of nowhere to, you know, to have the great start that they've had. But it's hard to say that anybody, when you talk about football team, it's hard to say that anybody in the NFL is better than New England is right now. And, I mean, they're doing it with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. And it just, they are a complete football team that knows how to win. And, you know, and talking about the Eagles, Neil, this is fantastic turnaround. And,
yeah.
Approach from Doug Peterson, and what, you know, we talk all the time about complementary football, and what Jim Schwartz has done with that defense is nothing short of amazing also. But think about this: when the Eagles were at the height of the Chip Kelly regime, they were playing on the average 71 snaps of defense a game. 71. This year, right now, you look at the Eagles and they're playing on the average 53 snaps of defense, the lowest in the NFL. One of the reasons why they've gotten off to this start is they play real complementary football. Now, Schwartz has done a great job with that defense, but the fact that the offense keeps them on the sideline, they, you know, they move the sticks, they play that term that everybody wants to talk about, complementary football, that's a tremendous advantage to your defense when you're playing 20-some snaps less than you did the year before. Yeah. I think that is a great example of when a coach has come in and put in a system that really, really makes a quantum leap with the football team. And, again, you can't underestimate the Wentz factor, but I just look at that football team. I think that's really a well-coached, well-organized. You know, if you're an Eagles fan, you got to feel real good about where you're at.
That is a fascinating stat, Jeff. And you know, I love a stat, so that is incredible when you look at that amount of snaps that they're taking fewer. And it kind of answers these questions, which I'll drag out of the mailbag now. Tom Marshall said, "Is Jim Schwartz getting the credit he deserves for his part in the Eagles being 3-0?" Alex Beekmeyer says, "Who's been better signing for the Eagles so far, Jim Schwartz or Carson Wentz?" Well, you're kind of saying that you got to throw Doug Peterson into that mix as well, then, Jeff, because it's not that fast-paced breakneck football of a year ago or of the previous 3 years. it's again, and it shows they're all kind of connected, aren't they? And they can, you know, playing a slower pace on offense can help you on defense.
Yeah, and you know, you look at football teams, great football teams, all have that ability. They can play to one another. Each side, how are the Patriots winning? I mean, Jacoby Brissett. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job. Give him credit. Mm. But the reality of it is, Neil, the longest pass he's completed to any player is 7 yards. Now, he's got some yardage after catch,
yeah,
but 7 yards. Mm. So what? And he took one sack last week. He doesn't turn it over. What they're getting out of that kid is exactly what they need. Let's not screw it up on offense. We'll play great special teams. Their punter had, four out of bounds inside the 20. They forced the opponent to play on a long field. The defense is playing really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, LeGarrette Blount gets over 20 carries again. So that's teams that really play to their strengths and try and mitigate their liabilities. And that's great coaching. That's coaching to me.
Mm. Jeff, going back to that Philadelphia game, there was one play I wanted to talk about, and it's subtle movements of a quarterback. Tom Brady once told me that he thought Dan Marino was one of the most mobile quarterbacks in the NFL. Well, if you watch Dan Marino run, it was like a giraffe on ice. He wasn't talking about that. He was talking about little movements in the pocket. And I want to go to the touchdown pass to Darren Sproles, where Carson Wentz has got pressure coming off the left, and he takes two little skip steps forward and then another two to the side to his right and then delivers the pass. I mean, these are the kind of things which showed me he has some veteran poise.
Yeah, and that's the pocket presence that he showed, that he demonstrated at North Dakota State. Now, again, what's phenomenal to all of us as football fans is to think that, you know, that this time last year, he's playing the likes of South Dakota and South Dakota State. And
he never went out of the Dakotas.
It's not, you know, that's not the Steelers and the Patriots. That's a low level of Division I college football. But then he's been able to translate all of those skills to the highest level in the game, which is the National Football League. And you look at his numbers last week, 23 of 31, 301, two touchdowns, no interceptions, and no sacks. So, you know, and I'm not a big quarterback rating guy, Neil, but, you know, when you look at that, you just go, that's the kind of clean game that rookies typically don't play. Hmm. And so he is way, way beyond his years in terms of what his development is. And you got to give Doug and that coaching staff a lot of credit for that, because they're giving that kid a little bit more each week. As you watch them, he gets a little bit more each week, a few more things, a couple harder throws. And, you know, he just nothing seems to be too big for him right now in the National Football League. And now coordinators have had chances to have him on tape enough to start the game plan against him. You know, and he took the Steelers apart. I mean, took them apart.
Yeah, biggest loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers since 1989, Jeff. That predates Bill Cowher. It predates Mike Tomlin. I mean, it was a total from start to finish wipeout, and it was the one, because for Philadelphia it was the first time, you know, I know that everyone in the NFL is good, but it was the first time they played that true NFL top level team, because they beat Cleveland and they beat Chicago. So you could always throw that at the Eagles. Well, we can't throw that at them anymore, because they beat a team that many felt was the best in the league going into week three.
You know, and there was so much bravado spoken from the Steelers about how they were going to, you know, beat him up and confuse him. And, you know, and again, you're talking about a team that really can do that to you with that group of linebackers that they have and all of the flexibility with the 3-4 and all the ways that they can attack you and bring pressure from everywhere. And he just seemed to be oblivious to all of it as he played. He played such a, as I say, clean game. You know, and then you look at their football team, and you know, the guys that you would think, particularly running the football, Matthews and Sproles and Kenyon Barner, they're not the guys. Wendell Smallwood, 17 carries for 79 yards. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like they're getting play from a lot of parts of that football team that, you know, you wouldn't expect. And again, that's what great teams do. You get contributions from everybody.
They do. Jeff, there were some must-win games for several teams early in the season. We won't go through every game, as we've talked about before, and we don't dissect every play on every game. We want to talk about the big kind of issues here and inside the huddle, the things that caught our eye. So we're going to look at Washington and the New York Giants. 29-27 win for the Redskins, so they needed that. That was their first victory away on the road against a division rival. So much was made of Odell Beckham Jr. against Josh Norman, Jeff. And at one point, halfway through the second half, I turned to Sean and I said, you know what, a good game's broken out here, and I've forgotten about those two for a while. But then Odell picks a fight with the kick in net. He's stomping up and down, doing the ministry of silly walks up and down the sideline. There was a point I wrote yesterday, Jeff, where I said that Odell Beckham looked like one of my sort of toddlers when you wouldn't give them another bag of sweets when they were little, really little young kids. And then I thought, you know what, even my kids didn't behave that way. I mean, this to me, again, he was crying on the sidelines. I mean, you have adversity in games. You don't deal with it that way, do you?
Well, you know, there are some guys that do, and you know, he's not the first guy to have, you know, or won't be the last guy to have a meltdown on the sidelines.
No.
The thing that is concerning about it, as you look at it, is, you know, as talented as he is, and he really is a, you know, incredibly talented young player, that maturity factor is really the thing that's holding him back right now, because too many times in his career now in the National Football League have we seen him get so emotional in a game that it actually takes his focus and his, you know, it's a detriment to his play. And, you know, like I said, you saw it with Terrell Owens, you know, you've seen it with numerous guys, you know, in this league. But the fact of the matter is, number one, it becomes a complete distraction to your football team. And then number two, you can't play the game at a high level when you're that emotional. And, you know, I think if you said who won that battle, obviously when you see that kind of meltdown, it wasn't Josh Norman that we saw, you know, having a tirade. So I really hope for the kid he'll grow through this stuff and, you know, come out the other end. You know, you've seen Dez go through it, you know, and I think he's kind of matured his way through it in his first 5 years in the National Football League. So again, it's just it's part of the growing process that he's going to have to do as an individual if he's going to play at, if he's going to be one of those guys that's a highest level guy.
Yeah.
He's talented enough.
Oh, he's definitely absolutely talented to be the best ever played. He's got all of that talent. Jeff, you mentioned his focus and the fact that it could be a distraction. That was probably my biggest thing with it, because Eli Manning had to then come over and spend a few seconds talking to Odell Beckham, trying to calm him down. And I know it was only a few seconds, but it's not like quarterbacks on sidelines when they're not on the field are just sitting reading the newspaper. Again, Eli would have had other things he would have been doing at that time, and he couldn't do them. And it's only a small, small thing, but it is an indication of the focus then becomes on, okay, well, we need to fix Odell Beckham before we... Coach, you want me to look at these plays on this tablet? Well, I can't at the moment. I'm just going over there to sort out Odell Beckham because he's having a meltdown. You can't do both.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, the quarterback in particular, between series, has an awful lot of information that he has to digest with the coaches, and that's why typically you see the offensive coordinator or the quarterback coach, if the offensive coordinator's upstairs, sit with the quarterback, go through the pictures, go through the tablet, and talk about alignments, talk about looks, talk about where they want to attack the next series, what the audibles will be against certain looks, and all of that gets put on the back burner when you've got to go over and deal with, you know, a guy who's going through an emotional meltdown. So it does become a distraction. It becomes a distraction to the coaches. It becomes a distraction to everybody on the football team.
I mentioned some of those other must wins. Buffalo got theirs. Miami just about got theirs. They tried every which way to lose that one against the Cleveland Browns. Indianapolis with a late touchdown pass, Andrew Luck to T.Y. Hilton, 63 yards to overcome the San Diego Chargers. But Jacksonville, Jeff, again, it was almost like they were kind of worried they were going to win. It's like, hang on a minute, we kick a field goal here and we've got Baltimore down needing a touchdown to win with 2 minutes left and our defense is playing well. Well, this field goal's going to get blocked then, and then Baltimore go and kick one. I mean, it just is the way it feels with Jacksonville at the moment. so disappointing again for them to lose a close one. But, you know, some of these teams, they needed these wins. I know it was only week three, but there were some seats warming up.
Well, I think you hit the most obvious one first, which was Buffalo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had gone through all that, you know, turbulent time with firing the offensive coordinator and, you know, again, talking about the defense, where they were at. And then Arizona team comes in that really needs a win itself, and they really just laid an egg. I mean, they did not play well. They didn't start well. Carson Palmer threw four interceptions. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't even, you know, I mean, they just looked bad in every area. Snap a ball over the, you know, past the holder on a field goal, turns into a touchdown for the Bills. And, you know, the Bills just seemed to be at a way Arizona did. And that's really surprising to me, because the Cardinals' start has been kind of perplexing, I think, for everybody. And I listened to the press conference after the game, and, you know, Bruce Arians just sounded frustrated. You know, he like he was lost for explanation about why they start so poorly.
Yeah, it was. They've just been sloppy, haven't they? Because there was a. Yeah. If you look at the game they lost to New England, Jeff, high snap on the game-winning field goal, puts the timing all out. They missed the kick, and they had another field goal attempt go through the holder's hands at the weekend, and it was returned for a touchdown for Buffalo. Well, there's a 10-point swing right there in the game. So those are the kind of plays the Cardinals are making at the moment. What about the Minnesota, Jeff? I mean, this is just becoming quite a story with what Mike Zimmer's doing, because they now, we're, what, three, before we were even 3 weeks in, they'd lost Teddy Bridgewater, Matt Khalil, Adrian Peterson, and they went into that game last week without Sharif Floyd, the starting defensive tackle. They give Cam a 10-point lead. They're on the road. No problem. They just don't blink.
No, and, you know, that defense has played such amazing. And I don't know if they get the credit that they really deserve, but, I mean, when you watch them, and now you compare, everybody talks about, the Broncos defense, and you now have an opportunity to compare them against a like opponent. You know, they go into Carolina on the road, and they intercept Cam three times, hit him a number of times, stop the run, do everything that you have to do to, you know, to win a football game defensively. And the offense does just enough, and they come away with a 22-10 win on the road in Carolina. I mean, that's a big, big win for them. I think a real confidence booster for them. And, you know, you look at they're getting good enough quarterback play out of Sam Bradford. 18 to 28 for 171. He didn't turn it over, you know. Only got sacked twice against a good Carolina pass rush. But, you know, Kyle Rudolph, seven catches. Our guy is playing really, really well right now. And I think when it's all sorted out, I think, you know, Jerick McKinnon and Asiata, they're gonna be enough as a, you know, running back by committee. They, you know, they don't have to lean on one guy like they had to so much in the past with Adrian Peterson. So I think it looks good. It's a bright future right now for the Vikings. You got to feel good about your team.
Absolutely. Let's go back to Cam Newton and continue our twonk watch, because last week we looked at what Cam was wearing. Oh, my goodness. This week, Jeff, what was that? It was like, I saw his post-game press conference. It was like some sort of patchwork quilt. Then the top hat. It was like, I'll tell you what he looked like. My kids watched, there was a film, one of the Disney films. It was Princess and the Frog or something. And it was like a baddie set down in New Orleans who had a top hat on. What is Cam thinking? He must have, I mean,
he needs help. He needs an assistant to dress him.
Well, this is how bad it's got, Jeff, because I'm thinking of offering fashion advice to Cam Newton. Then you know you're in trouble. Here, let's not. I want to talk about the. I want to talk about a couple of other quarterback meltdowns, because there were a couple. Ryan Fitzpatrick was one of them. But first, Jeff, because this is kind of in your area, and we've talked about coaching issues that pop up from time to time in the NFL. So we had the big. What was it? 1 hour and 9 minutes, something like that. The storm delay in Tampa. You know, there was 2 minutes left in that game, and the Rams had a. They were trying to, you know, run out the clock, and eventually Tampa Bay stopped them. First of all, have you been involved in anything like that, any weather delays as a coach? And how do you deal with that, and how do you keep the players ready to play? And then I've got another question. Have you been involved in anything like that?
Yeah, we actually just had one of those this year. We're out in Winnipeg getting ready to play them. And teams go out, warm up. We're just about ready to go back out for kickoff. And the league officials say no go because a awful lightning storm was moving through. And it delayed us, Neil, for over 2 hours.
Wow.
The kickoff for over 2 hours. As a matter of fact, we were within 10 minutes of having the game being canceled and had to be played the next day. But they just were not going to put the athletes or the people out there in the midst of a lightning storm where the potential for somebody to get hurt. It is extremely difficult because, you know, especially in that case, you've warmed up, you're ready to play, emotionally you're ready to play, psychologically you're ready to play, and then all of a sudden you got to go back in the locker room and sit there for you don't know how long. First they say it's a half an hour, then they say, well, it's 45 minutes, then the next thing you know it's an hour, now it is really, really difficult. And usually teams that have maturity and have, you know, veteran players, they handle those types of situations better than young teams like our. Like, for example, we did not handle it particularly well.
Right.
You just try and keep them focused as best you can, but when you don't know how long it's going to be, it's really, really a difficult task. I think that comes down almost to the individual player having to do it in his own fashion. We had guys, you know, take some slept, some, you know, they played cards. I mean, what do you do? You're on the road. It's not your own place. You don't have meeting rooms. You don't have any place to go except just sit in the locker room and wait. And that's a very, very difficult task for any coach.
Waste nervous energy pacing up and down. So let's talk about the coaches and how they dealt with the aftermath then, Jeff. And this is what I want to get into because the Rams didn't run out the clock. They had to punt. Tampa Bay are driving downfield late on. They've got two timeouts left. Dirk Koetter calls a play. There's about 49 seconds left. And then instead of using a timeout, they basically lined up again, and they were really slow to line up. And before they could run another play, the clock was at 26 seconds. And then eventually they run out of time, they don't win the game, and they've still got one timeout left, which they didn't use. Dirk Koetter was asked about this after the game, and he said, "I didn't call a timeout because I was already on to the next play that I was calling." He is doing what Jason Garrett did early in his career, Jeff. He's a young head coach who's still handling the play calling. This is not like Mike McCarthy, who's a 10, 11, 12-year head coach who's now taken the reins back and is calling plays for the Green Bay Packers. Is this an indication of some of the stuff we saw with Jason? Because those kind of clock management issues were there early with the Cowboys, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is one of those tough deals for a guy who is both calling the plays and then managing the game as a head coach, because you really are asking you're asking yourself to do two very difficult things. Mm. Emotionally, you have to disengage from the game as you call a game, because you can't get caught up in the emotions of the game. And then the same thing, you have to also be aware of all the situations around you as the head coach, because you're managing the clock for both sides of the football and the kicking game and making all the strategic decisions about, you know, you just really, it's better, I think, when the head coach can be the head coach, just do that type of thing. If you're going to be involved that hands-on in one side of the game, whether it's defense or offense, in terms of calling the game, then you better have somebody that you can rely on to be in your ear in those times and say, okay, we don't want to, you know, you never want to have a timeout in your pocket when the game's over.
No.
In that situation, you have to use that timeout and get yourself an opportunity to have a chance to win the game. And, you know, so again, I think that's a growing process for Dirk. And I think it's going to be, you know, as these young coaches, you watch Doug Peterson and some of these guys go through this for the first time, you know, their ability to, you know, disengage from the emotion of the game and be into the situations of the game. Nobody does it better, again, and it sounds like we're, you know, on his bandwagon, but nobody does it better than Belichick, because right. You remember that Super Bowl incident where the last play of the game, there's a Seattle personnel shuffle, and New England was able to get into the right defense because Belichick was thinking one play ahead and wasn't wasn't into what the call was going to be on defense, but what the situation was going to be on defense. And they were able to get their three-corner goal line package in, and, you know, the rest is history when Malcolm Butler picked the ball off.
Yeah, I don't think we should, when he makes calls like that, Jeff, we should never apologize for getting on the Belichick bandwagon. Guy's probably, is he the best ever for you?
Well, yeah, to me he is, because I think, you know, what he's been able to do with building a team in the free agency era. You can talk about all of the dynasty teams if you want. You can talk about the Steelers. You can talk about, you know, the Giants. You can talk about all those teams that have been great, the 49ers. They all did it in a different day and age.
They did.
In this time, with the salary cap and free agency the way it is, to be able to maintain a level of excellence like they have is an indication to me that he is the best ever.
Well, look at just there on, you mentioned the 49ers. So here's a contrast. The 49ers in their heyday, Jeff, had Joe Montana, a Hall of Fame quarterback, backed up by Steve Young, a Hall of Fame quarterback. Here's Bill Belichick this week going in to face the Buffalo Bills. And there's potential, now it might not happen, there's potential that he's starting an NFL game with Julian Edelman at quarterback. I mean, it probably won't. It will probably be bandage up one of those other two guys and stick him out there. But, you know, he's done that with different quarterbacks. Yes, he's had a Hall of Famer in Tom Brady. But when Brady's gone down, Belichick has found a way to win games. They won with Matt Cassel. They won with Garoppolo. They won with Jacoby Brissett. They just find a way to get the job done. And this is the level playing field that didn't exist when the 49ers and the Steelers and the Packers in the 60s, 70s and 80s were running, you know, roughshod over the league. It's not supposed to happen in this era.
No, and again, that's why, in my opinion, he's the greatest ever, because he's done it at a time when it is far more difficult to do than it was in those days. And you know, they're so far ahead, Neil. You know, you talk about how they win. You know, they've won with defense. There have been years that they've been great on defense and you know, just managed the game on offense early in Brady's time. Then it was they outscored you. And, you know, whatever it is it takes to win, they find a way. And, you know, that, again, is indicative of, to me, the highest level of coaching.
Mm. Jeff, have you got any? Well, Ryan Fitzpatrick would be one that stood out for me. Perhaps there's a reason the Jets didn't want that long-term deal with him. That was a shocking display. Good display by Kansas City's defense, but six quarterback interceptions, you can't have that. Anything else that stood out for you in week three, which ended on Monday night with a big win for the Atlanta Falcons over the Saints and another shipping of a lot of points by the Saints defense?
Well, I tell you, the guy that impressed me on the weekend, and I think this was maybe as good a test as he's gotten, was, you know, Trevor Siemian going into Cincinnati, a good football team on the road, and a good defensive football team. And you look at his numbers, Neil, 23 of 35, four touchdowns, and he did it against a team that, and he's going to have to continue to do this, but people are just loading the box against him and saying, okay, show me seventh-round draft choice out of Northwestern that you can beat us. And he goes over the top to Emmanuel for a big one. He hits Emmanuel for another one. He had two, both Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel had over 100 yards, and he played an outstanding game. I thought an outstanding game. And that to me is – you know, we know their defense is outstanding, but when he can play at that level against a team that's basically just said to him, okay, young kid, we're going to see if you're good enough to beat us. And, you know, he certainly was. I thought that was an outstanding performance by him.
Yeah, that's the next step, that next level for the Broncos, isn't it, Jeff? Because Siemian going into that game in Cincinnati had thrown just two passes more than 20 yards in the air all season. But again, they challenged him. They said, go and do it. And he did it. If they can do that regularly with CJ Anderson running the football and that defense, they're a contender to repeat again. They're right there in that top band of teams in the AFC.
Yeah, and you know what I was really impressed with? You know, it was interesting in the lead up to the game. You know, Emmanuel had come out and said that he wanted it on him. I think they were a little frustrated with how conservative they were offensively. And, you know, obviously recognizing that the box is loaded against him. And, you know, he came out publicly and said, put it on us, but we want to, you know, we want to be the guys. That's the Emmanuel that I remember as I coached him in college. He was always like that. He wanted the ball, and not in a negative way. He wanted the responsibility of getting open. He wanted to say, hey, come on, put it on me. And, you know, and he really responded, 9 catches for 117 and 2 TDs. And I think he is really now starting to take that number one role, if you will, away from Demaryius Thomas as he goes forward in his career. And I'm really happy for him because he's worked so hard to get, you know, to get there.
Yeah, a little bit of Antonio Brown in his game on Sunday night, Jeff. So it's London Game Week, and we want to tell you about your last chance to click and collect for Game 1 at Wembley. So this is a special offer through NFL Shop Europe. So this offer closes at 6 p.m. On Wednesday, September the 27th. But basically, you can order anything you want from NFL Shop Europe, and you skip the queues to pick up on game day outside Wembley Stadium. This is an exclusive service to our listeners on Inside the Huddle. So that's a good one. It's going to be an exciting week, Jeff. We got it's great. We'll have both teams on stage at Regent Street. Centre of London will be packed out again. We've got old alumni coming over, Tony Baselli, Dallas Clark, Gary Brackett, the middle linebacker from the Colts Super Bowl years. It should be a fantastic week. So we'll talk about the Jags and the Colts in a minute when we get to it. But let's do our picks.
How are we doing? Have you been keeping a rolling tab? I got surprised a little bit. I got Shanghai at a couple games. I didn't see a couple of those coming.
No,
but
I'm glad you asked. I don't have the week two scores to hand, but I am going to get them so we can keep a rolling total all year. But I can tell you that you went 8-8 last week, and you won with 8-8 because I went 7-9. So, listeners,
we're playing in a bad division if we won. If I won with 8-8.
So our listeners, you know, don't take these picks straight to the bookies, otherwise you'll be in trouble. This is just for fun. So let's start Thursday night then, Jeff. Week 4, Miami at Cincinnati. I thought the Dolphins were sloppy. If Cody Parkey could kick straight, they'd still be 0-3. So I'm going Bengals.
Yeah, I like the Bengals here, and I think they'll bounce back after that, you know, frustrating loss against the Broncos.
All right, a breakfast time game for those on the East Coast of America is our one at Wembley Stadium on Sunday. It's a 2:30 kickoff in London, 9:30 a.m. on the East Coast. It's Indianapolis at Jacksonville, Jeff. Just first of all, it's great to have these three games here every year. It should be a fantastic week, but it is a must-win game, surely, for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and, you know, Neil, it's just so frustrating. I listened to Gus's press conference after the game, and you could hear in his voice that, you know, when he said, you know, it sounds like a broken record, and it is, that was, oof. I was just like, oh, my God, you know, and he's got to win. I mean, he's got to win. They have shown improvement on defense, and I just can't play a total football game yet.
If it comes down to it, Jeff, because this could be a close game between two teams that are kind of hot and cold, I back Andrew Luck at the moment over Blake Bortles. I'm going Indy. What about you?
You know what? I think that this is a game that Jacksonville's going to respond. I think this will be a game where if they're ever going to do it for the guy who's been so good to them,
yep.
And I'm talking about Gus, a guy that's been stayed the course and is a player's guy and enthusiastic and all, this is a game they have to do it, and I'm going to go with Jacksonville.
All right. People tell me I'm an Andrew Luck guy, and I'm supposed to be unbiased in the media. I hope I'm wrong and you're right. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Tennessee at Houston. Tennessee have played some tough games, Jeff, some close games. Their defense is much better. Their defense is pretty good. They held the Raiders just 2 touchdowns last week. This is a tough one to call, actually, even though it's in Houston. I'm probably going to go Houston, but what about the Titans? What
you think? You know, this is a game, too, I don't know if the fans realize this, but this is a bitter rival game because the Titans were the old Houston Oilers. And I know from being in Houston and you know, the media, John McClain and the media down there, they still hold a grudge against the Bud Adams family,
yeah,
who owns the Titans, for moving that team out of there. And so this is one that is a bitter rival game. The fans in Houston are really, really tough on the Titans. I'm going to take Houston, and I'm going to tell you why, because I just don't, you know, right now, Mariota's making some plays, but he's also throwing some balls to the wrong people. And, you know, I don't know if they're good enough offensively. Obviously, Dick LeBeau's done a great job defensively there, but I just don't see enough out of them offensively. If Houston can stop the run, I think Tennessee's in trouble.
Mm. Jeff, Alex Mason, who's our new producer on Sky Sports, we were laughing on Sunday night in the studio. I was moaning about the Miami Dolphins. And he said, think how I feel. He said, I support a team that doesn't even exist anymore. He was a Houston Oilers fan back in the day, and now he's kind of Tennessee Titans because that's where the Oilers kind of ended up. But you can see where the conflict comes from and kind of where some people would, in Houston, still be kind of conflicted about the whole thing.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, it's the Titans have, you know, they share that powder blue, which was the Oilers' old blue. And, you know, back in when Jerry was the head coach there, my buddy Jerry Glanville was the head coach there, it was the Lovey Blue days, and all the way back to Bum Phillips and Earl Campbell and all that. they had a rich, rich tradition in Houston, and this, you know, like I'm sure St. Louis feels right now, they really felt jilted when Mr. Adams took the team and moved it to Tennessee. And so, you know, there are a lot of fans, football fans in that city that are still, that grew up as Oiler fans and, you know, still have a, you know, intense dislike for anything, you know, related to Bud Adams for moving that team out of the city.
Jeff, I'm supposed to move on and make other picks, but we'll have to rattle through some in a minute, because I just want to say then, Jerry Glanville obviously wielded more power in Atlanta than he did in Houston, because they wore that powder blue in Houston. But as soon as Jerry was the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, they went from red to what color? What's Jerry's favorite color?
Black. And you know what? Don't ever call black a color around Jerry Glanville, because he will tell you,
what is it?
Black is not a color, it's an attitude.
All right, let's move on. Cleveland at Miami. So you got to credit the Browns. Hugh Jackson had them playing tough. Terrell Pryor turned some head last week by saying, I'm willing to die on the field for this team. Well, okay, we don't want it to go that far, Terrell, but he put it on the line. He was throwing passes. He was running. He had 100-odd yards receiving again. You got to like what Terrell Pryor did for the Browns, but I am going to go Washington to win at home.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Redskins and continue to, you know, go against Cleveland until they get some better players in there. But you're right. Terrell Pryor accounted for 200 yards of offense, whether you talk about running it, passing it, or catching it. And he's kind of a throwback guy. I mean, you talk about triple threat guys. It's been a long time since somebody's done those kind of things in the NFL. And that's good because, you know, Neil, he really has paid his dues. He's quarterback to trying to be a receiver. And, you know, he's a great athlete, and you like to see a guy succeed after he's gone through the frustrations that he's felt.
Seattle at the New York Jets, Jeff.
You know, I'm going to take Seattle. I don't think the injuries that, you know, to the quarterback are certainly going to be enough that the Jets can overcome a real good Seattle team. The Jets, to me, right now are, you know, better, but still inconsistent, too inconsistent in their play, particularly a quarterback. So I'm going to take Seattle.
I'm taking the Jets.
You really?
I'm taking the Jets. They have that fearsome front four. That defensive front can get after Russell Wilson. I'm worried about him. There's no Thomas Rawls, of course, for the Seahawks. I just have a funny feeling in the water. So that's probably going to be the difference between me and you. You're going to win this week. Buffalo at New England. Tough one to call because we don't know who's playing at quarterback for New England. But some way, somehow, Belichick gets it done. I'm going Patriots.
Yeah, I tell you what, this is all Rex had to do was win one game, and all of a sudden he's popping off about they're going to get after whatever quarterback New England puts on the field. I just like, oh my goodness, come on, man, you just won one. Now don't do this. You got to take New England. I mean, they're just such a good football team, and I think they'll, you know, continue to find a way. Buffalo, this will be a big one. If they could get this done, that would be a huge, huge win for them. But I still think New England will win.
All right. Carolina, Atlanta. Who'd you like in this one, Jeff? In Atlanta?
I think Atlanta got the big win last night. But, you know, it's a short week. Carolina's coming off a loss. This is a this is a big rival game too, and I think Carolina will go in there and play well enough to win.
All right, I'm going Carolina as well. Our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday is Oakland at Baltimore, and Jeff, you know me, I'm ultimately a fan at heart, so this is absolute torture for me this week because I'm going to be working on the London game. I'm going to be at Regent Street interviewing all the players and coaches on stage. I'm going to be at Wembley Stadium on Sunday for the tailgate party first thing in the morning. I'm going to go into the stadium and watch the player warm-ups, and probably about 15 minutes after they kick off, I'm going to have to leave and go to work. Torture. And I'm going to do the Baltimore Ravens against the Oakland Raiders. Who do you like in this one?
The Ravens win so ugly.
Yeah,
they win so ugly. I just, I can't... I got to go Raiders. And that's not my Raider heart coming out. I'm just telling you, I just don't. The Ravens, I mean, give Harbaugh credit because he finds a way to get more points than the opponent, but they're ugly, and I mean ugly.
No, I'm going to go Raiders as well. I think those close wins, for Baltimore, you can't win all of those, and I think Oakland get the win in week four. Detroit at Chicago. Marvin Jones had 200 yards receiving last week for the Lions. So I'm going to go Detroit, Jeff. But the question is, who are the Chicago Bears? What is the identity of the Chicago Bears at the moment? I mean, they're at rock bottom, aren't they?
Yeah, it's you watch them, and I just feel bad for Foxy because I don't know if he really realized just how far down they were when he went in there. And, the injury to Cutler certainly doesn't help him. Brian Hoyer didn't play bad. He was 30-49 for, he had 300 yards and two touchdowns. But, I don't think Brian Hoyer is, he's a backup, and that's what he is. The Cowboys hung 31 on him. Defensively, they're not there yet. They're still trying to get the right personnel for what Vic Fangio wants to do on defense. I was impressed by Stafford when I watched him last week. He really is a good quarterback. It's unfortunate. I think he doesn't have great players around him particularly, but they've really done a good job of trying to improve the offensive line. Ebron is playing, starting to make some plays that you anticipated he would make when they drafted him out of North Carolina. Golden Tate, I just think, frankly, Detroit's a better football team.
Yeah, I'm going Lions as well. Denver at Tampa Bay takes us into our late games, Jeff. I do like where I think Tampa Bay are going, but they're obviously going. They're not there yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll go into Tampa and win. Yeah. They're trending, as they say, in the right direction. I think Tampa's a little bit, the thing with Safarian Jenkins, you cut him the week of the game, and then they have the clock management issue, and they're a little bit in turmoil right now. So I think again, Denver better overall football team on the road, tough road, but I think Denver's good enough.
All right, LA Rams at the Arizona Cardinals. Now, Jeff, I actually sometimes when I watch you working on the touchscreen and you're doing all sorts of arrows here and players are going there and they're showing this, and I'm just looking and I'm thinking, I could never be a coach. But it must be easy because all Jeff Fisher did this week was make the Los Angeles Rams offense stand in the end zone during practice. Then it comes to the game on Sunday, they score four touchdowns on offense. It's a simple game.
You think so?
Yeah, well, it must be, surely. There's not many coaches. Actually, there's not many of you guys I haven't met who've got grey hair. You guys look, you don't, not personally, but most look really stressed and knackered half the time.
Well, you know what? I looked at Jeff the other day, and he looks like he's aged 20 years in the last two.
Yeah.
I mean, he and his football team can do it to you, too, because they one week they look really, really good, and then the next week they look really – you just don't know what team you're going to get, particularly offensively. I think, defensively, Greg really is
– yeah.
Got an identity. Offensively, I think they're still trying to figure out who exactly they are, and that's a long time they've been trying to do that. When they were in St. Louis, it was the same story. Greg Williams and the defense would play extremely well, and the offense couldn't score. Now last week they go out and score, like you say, hang four touchdowns. I just they're too all over the map for me. And again, so I think Arizona, you know, is doing, you know, checking their whole card right now.
Yeah.
And they know what this one means. You know, their chances, somebody gave me some stat the other day about now their chances of winning the Super Bowl are like 1% if you go on history.
That's right.
From that kind of start. But I just think Bruce will get them back, and they're too good a football team. They're too talented to you know, lose to the Rams.
All right. New Orleans at San Diego. I'm going Arizona as well in that game, that last one.
This is the battle of two quarterbacks that deserve better than they got.
Exactly.
Right now.
The I've been shafted bowl.
Yeah, exactly, because both of them are gunslingers, and both of them are incredible, you know, competitors with completely opposite personalities. But, you know, both deserve better than they have, because you watch Breeze last night, and he's just trying to do it basically by himself. Mm. And I think the same thing, you know, is true in San Diego. You know, Philip Rivers, he has nobody around him. And he's just like, he reminds me, when I watch him play, he reminds me of the old movie, The Alamo. And you remember when Davy Crockett, when 10,000 Mexicans were coming over the wall,
right,
and Davy Crockett standing there with a Bowie knife. That's what it reminds me of.
Well,
he just stands in there and keeps slinging it,
yeah,
and gets hit and gets knocked down. And both of these quarterbacks, you know, I love them and deserve better than what they got.
Well, Rivers, for me, Jeff, is the modern day Dan Marino, because he's that,
yeah,
you know, he doesn't run with it. He can throw it anywhere over the field. He never knows when he's beaten, but ultimately he's got no running game and he's got no defense and he's not got enough around him. And by the end of the career, we'll be saying, look at those Hall of Fame numbers, but never even sniffed a championship.
Yeah, and that's really sad. You know, the one thing about Drew has a Super Bowl,
yes,
to his credit.
Mm.
But, you know, Philip just has never had a football team around him that was balanced enough.
Yeah.
And
a few,
you know,
playoff runs here and there, but nothing.
Yeah, and I think that's sad that that's the way he's probably going to get remembered. Mm. And, you know, but I think New Orleans has a better football team. Now, again, it's I say that without a lot of conviction in my voice, as you can hear.
You're saying it, you don't mean it.
If they don't find a way to score to play some defense, I don't care who they're playing. I mean, you give up 45 to the Falcons last night, and so I'm gonna let my heart go with this one, and I'm gonna take Philip and San Diego, because I'd love to see them have a little success.
All right, I'm going New Orleans to get their first win of the season and to win on the road. Dallas at San Francisco is the final 9:25 game. Jeff, as much as I said about Colin Kaepernick at the start and about how I think he's a bad quarterback who's regressed, we're not far away from seeing him replace Blaine Gabbert, I don't think. Blaine Gabbert hit one of his own receivers on the back of the head last week when he wasn't even looking. I think he had about 2 yards passing the entire third quarter. You know, it's just bad there on offense for the 49ers.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Michael Bennett made the comment that he thought the 49ers, after the game, he thought the 49ers would be better with Kaepernick out on the field.
Yeah.
And maybe they would be, just to have his athleticism out there, the ability to, you know, make a play with your feet and you know, take the ball on the perimeter and do some things with it. I agree with you. I don't think we're that far away from seeing that. Now, again, that says volumes. That says all you need to say about, you know, where the 49ers are right now. Mm. So, again, I don't think they're going to be able to get that done. And the Cowboys, you know, give them some credit. I mean, they're playing with a quarterback that they never anticipated they'd be playing with, and they've got that good offensive line, and defensively, I think Rod Marinelli's, you know, done a great job there, because again, you look at their personnel on defense, and you know, it doesn't wow you, but he's got them playing hard and playing, you know, sound.
Jeff, imagine if you're a long-term 49ers fan. Say it's like Martin Johnson, our old friend, the old England rugby legend. You've gone from Joe Montana and Steve Young to Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick.
You know, I tell you, it happens in...
Yeah, it goes around,
every,
right?
It's that's the toughest thing, because there are just so few quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And you know, you've seen it happen in numerous places where, you know, you go from Dan Marino to Jay Feely. I mean, that's a pretty good drop-off, too. So it's not the first time that it's happened. And, you know, it's that just is another indication of why it's so important that you have not only one guy at that position, but if you can have depth at that position, that is really a rare situation.
All right, both going Dallas in that one then. A couple to finish off on. The Sunday night game is Kansas City at Pittsburgh, and the Monday night game, the New York Giants at the Minnesota Vikings. Jeff, going to try and rattle through the... I'm going both home teams. I'm going Pittsburgh to bounce back and to win, and Minnesota against the Giants could be an absolute cracker on Monday night. I don't want to bet against Mike Zimmer at the moment. So in those last two, I'm going Pittsburgh and Minnesota to win.
I agree. I'd take it exactly the same way for the exact same reason.
Mm. All right, let's wrap that up then. I've got one question I want to ask in the mailbag, Jeff, as we finish off this week's Inside the Huddle. It comes from Alex Robertson, who says, do you think the LA Rams will regret not taking Carson Wentz? Jeff, this is something where, whether it be the Rams or the Browns, this is going to play out over the next few years, isn't it? Because in the same way we look at how did Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III pan out? How did Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning play out? When it's the top two picks are quarterbacks, they are intertwined for the rest of their careers, surely.
No question. And you know, I think this is one of those things that it's way, way, way too early to start, you know, start making decisions about who was the better pick. Right now, certainly, the early returns would tell you that Wentz is, you know, far, far, far ahead. But in the end, it's the final analysis that matters. You know, again, you don't know where Goff is at right now because, you know, we haven't seen enough of him. And Wentz certainly is playing beyond expectations. I think if you talk to people in the Philadelphia Eagle organization in, you know, 6 months ago and they said, you know, you told them that he would be playing at this level and they have a football team that's playing at this level, they say, well, that's a nice thought, but I don't, you know, nobody's going to tell me that they anticipate he's going to play this well.
No.
Now, can he continue to do it? There's so much that goes into it, Neil. Is he going to stay healthy? You know, can they continue to keep good players around him? All of that's going to be a factor as he goes forward. I think all the indications are that he can be that next, you know, Andrew Luck type guy.
Yeah.
But again, just like Andrew Luck, you know, when he came into the league and there was a huge spike as a, you know, early in his career, and then he started getting hit, and then he started getting hurt, and then they didn't have enough around him, and he was trying to do too much, and now it's, you know, you look at him and you say his career's kind of plateaued a little bit.
What?
Well, that's not really his fault. That's, you know, it's because he has to do too much.
Yeah. And you're right, Jeff, the standing the test of time thing is going to be the key. We are 3 weeks in, and we haven't even seen Jared Goff yet, so we don't know what Jared Goff can become. If we were 3 weeks into the 2005 NFL season, we'd be saying, well, at least Alex Smith is better than Aaron Rodgers because he's on the field for the 49ers, and this Aaron Rodgers kid sitting on the bench in Green Bay, we kind of know how that's panned out. So we've got to wait, and you really won't know for a number of years.
That's a good one to just talk about for a second. Mm. It was good to see kind of the old Aaron Rodgers again.
Yes.
You know, even though his numbers weren't huge, you saw some of the things that, you know, that made us say he's the best quarterback in football right now. And I think, you know, that's a guy we haven't talked about very much because his play wasn't at the elite level much of the last year and a half. So I think that was good for Packer fans, certainly, and for all of us fans in the NFL, see him again play as well as he did in Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jeff, we are out of time, so we want to wish everyone a happy London Game Week, all our listeners. Make sure you take advantage of that offer with NFL Shop Europe. You've got until 6 o'clock tomorrow night, Wednesday night, for your click and collect stuff. And I hope to see all of you on Regent Street on Saturday from 12 o'clock lunchtime for 6 hours. I'll be up on stage interviewing the Colts players and coaches, the Jags players and coaches, alumni, veterans from around the league. It should be a fantastic, fantastic week. Jeff, until next week, when I'll be, I won't have any voice left, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha. Aloha. I know there'll be one NFL fan that's going to have a great week in London, and it's Neil Reynolds, because this is the highlight, man. This is the, you are going to rock that Regent Street.
I love it. I love it. I'll see you next week, pal.
All right, mate. See ya.